I smart. Silas grins. I don't know myself well, but I can tell I have a lot of game.
Oh, please, I say. If you were a game, Silas, you'd be Monopoly. You just go on, and everyone ends up cheating just to be over with it.
He's quiet for a minute. I feel bad for saying something so awkward, even if it was a joke.
You're probably right, he laughs. That's why you cheated on me with that asshat Brian. Lucky for you, I'm not Monopoly Silas anymore. I'm Tetris Silas. All my pieces and parts are gonna fit into all of your pieces and parts.
I snort. And the guidance counselors, apparently.
Low blow, Charlie,
he says, shaking his head. I wait a few seconds, chewing on my lip. Then I say, I don't think I want you to call me that.
Silas turns to look at me.
Charlie?
Yeah. I look over at him. Is that weird? I don't feel like I'm her. I don't even know her. It just doesn't feel like my name.
He nods as we walk toward his car.
So, I get to rename you?
Until we figure all this out, yeah.
Poppy,
he says.
No.
Lucy.
Hell no, what's wrong with you?
He opens the passenger side door to his Rover, and I climb in.
Okay. I can see you don't like traditionally cute names. We can try for something tougher.
He walks around to the driver's side and climbs in.
Xena.
No.
Rogue.
Ugh, no.
We go back and forth like this until Silas's GPS tells us that we've arrived. I look around, surprised that I was too engaged with him to notice the drive here. When I look down at my phone, I see that Brian has texted me 6 times. I don't want to deal with him right now. I shove my phone and wallet under the seat, out of view.
Where are we?
Bourbon Street, he says. Most happening place in New Orleans.
How do you know that? I ask suspiciously.
I Googled it.
We stare at each other over the hood, and then both shut our doors at the same time.
How did you know what Google was?
I thought that's what we're supposed to be figuring out together.
We meet at the front of the car. I think we're aliens, I say. That's why we don't have any of Charlie and Silas's memories, but we remember things like Google and Tetris because of the computer chips in our brains.
So, can I rename you Alien?
Before I can think about what I'm doing, I send the back of my hand into his chest.
Focus, Silas!
He umphs, and then I'm pointing straight ahead.
What's that?
I walk ahead of him. It's a building, castle-like in structure, and white. There are 3 spires jutting up toward the sky.
Looks like a church,
he says, taking out his phone.
What are you doing?
Taking a picture, in case we forget again. I figure we should document what's happening and where we go.
I'm quiet as I think about what he said. It's a really good idea.
That's where we should go, right? Churches help people.
My voice trails off.
Yes, says Silas. They help people, not aliens. And since we're...
I hit him again. I wish he would take this seriously. What if we're angels, and we're supposed to help someone, and we were given these bodies to fulfill our mission?
He sighs. Are you listening to yourself?
We've reached the doors to the church, which are ironically locked.
Okay, I say, spinning around. What's your suggestion for what's happened to us? Did we boink our heads together and lose our memories? Or maybe we ate something that really messed us up?
I storm down the stairs.
Hey,
he calls.
You're not allowed to get mad at me. This is not my fault.
He runs down the stairs after me.
How do we know that? We don't know anything, Silas. This could be all your fault.
We're standing at the bottom of the stairs now, staring at each other.
Maybe it is,
he says.
But whatever I did, you did it too. Because in case you haven't noticed, we're in the same boat.
I clench and unclench my fists, take deep breaths, concentrate on staring at the church until my eyes water.
Look,
Silas says, stepping closer.
I'm sorry for turning this into a joke. I want to figure it out as much as you do. What are some of your other ideas?
I close my eyes. Fairy tales, I say, looking back up at him.
Someone is always cursed. To break the spell, they have to figure something out about themselves. Then...
Then what?
I can tell he's trying to take me seriously, but this somehow makes me angrier. There's a kiss. He grins.
A kiss, huh? I've never kissed anyone before.
Silas!
What? If I can't remember, it doesn't count.
I fold my arms across my chest and watch a street musician pick up his violin. He remembers the first time he picked up a violin, the first notes he played, who gave it to him. I envy his memories.
I'll be serious, Charlie. I'm sorry.
I look at Silas out of the corner of my eye. He looks genuinely sorry, hands shoved into his pockets, neck dropping like it's suddenly too heavy.
So, what do you think we need to do? Kiss?
I shrug. It's worth a try, right?
You said in fairy tales they have to figure something out first.
Yeah, like Sleeping Beauty needed someone brave to kiss her and wake her from the sleeping curse. Snow White needed True Love's kiss to bring her back to life. Ariel needed to get Eric to kiss her to break the spell the Sea Witch put on her. He perks up.
Those are movies, he says. Do you remember watching them?
I don't remember watching them. I just know I've seen them. Mr. Dietzen spoke about fairy tales in English today. That's where I got the idea. We start walking toward the street musician, who is playing something slow and mournful.
Sounds like the breaking of the curse is mostly up to the guy,
Silas says.
He needs to mean something to her.
Yeah. My voice drops off as we stop to listen. I wish I knew the song he was playing. It sounds like something I've heard, but I have no name for it. There's a girl, I say softly. I want to talk to her. I think maybe she knows something. A few people have referred to her as the shrimp. Silas's eyebrows draw together.
What do you mean? Who is she?
I don't know. She's in a couple of my classes. It's just a feeling. We stand among a group of onlookers, and Silas reaches for my hand. For the first time, I don't pull away from him. I let his warm fingers intertwine with mine. With his free hand, he takes a picture of the violinist. Then he looks down at me.
So I can remember the first time I held your hand.
Chapter 12. Silas. We've walked 2 blocks, and she hasn't let go of my hand yet. I don't know if it's because she likes holding it, or if it's because Bourbon Street is, well... Oh, God, she says, turning toward me. She fists my shirt in her hand and presses her forehead against my arm. That guy just flashed me, she says, laughing into the sleeve of my shirt. Silas, I just saw my first penis! I laugh as I continue steering her through the inebriated crowd of Bourbon Street. After walking a ways, she peeks up again. We're now approaching an even larger group of belligerent men, all without shirts. In the place of shirts are mounds of beads draped around their necks. They're all laughing and screaming at the people perched on the balconies above us. She squeezes my hand tighter until we've successfully navigated through them. She relaxes and puts more space between us. What's with the beads? She asks. Why would anyone spend money on such tacky jewelry? It's part of the Mardi Gras tradition, I tell her. I read about it when I was researching Bourbon Street. It started as a celebration for the last Tuesday before Lent, but I guess it's turned into a year-round thing. I pull her against my side and point down to the sidewalk in front of her. She sidesteps around what looks like puke. I'm hungry, she says. I laugh. Stepping over vomit made you hungry? No, vomit made me think of food, and food made my stomach growl. Feed me. She points to a restaurant up the street. The sign is flashing in red neon. Let's go there. She steps ahead of me, still gripping my hand. I glance down at my phone and follow her lead. I have 3 missed calls, one from Coach, one from my brother, and one from Mom. It's the first time I thought about my mother. I wonder what she's like. I wonder why I haven't met her yet. My whole body crashes into the back of Charlie's after she stops short to let a vehicle pass. Her hand flies up to the back of her head where my chin smashed against it. Ouch, she says, rubbing her head. I rub my chin and watch from behind her as she pushes her hair forward over her shoulder. My eyes fall to the tip of what appears to be a tattoo peeking out from the back of her shirt. She begins walking again, but I grab her shoulder. Wait, I tell her. My fingers trail to the collar of her shirt and I pull it down a couple of inches. Right below the nape of her neck is a small silhouette of trees in black ink. I run my fingers over their outline. You have a tattoo. Her hand flies to the spot I'm touching. What? She shrieks. She spins around and looks up at me.
I do not.
You do. I turn her back around and pull the shirt down again. Here, I say, as I trace the trees again. This time I notice as chills break out on her neck. I follow the line of tiny bumps with my eyes, running over her shoulder and hiding beneath her shirt. I look back at the tattoo again because her fingers are now attempting to feel what I'm feeling. I take two of them and press them against her skin. A silhouette of trees, I tell her, right here.
Trees,
she says, cocking her head to the side.
Why would I have trees?
She turns around.
I want to see it. Take a picture with your phone.
I pull her shirt down enough so that she can see the entire tattoo, even though it's no more than 3 inches wide. I brush her hair over her shoulder again, not for the sake of the picture, but because I've really been wanting to do that. I also reposition her hand so that it's coming across the front of her body, draping over her shoulder.
Silas, she grumbles, just take the damn picture. This is an art class.
I grin and wonder if I'm always like this. If I refuse to take a simple picture, knowing it only takes a little bit more effort to make it exceptional. I bring the phone up and snap the picture, then look at the screen, admiring how good the tattoo looks on her. She spins around and takes the phone from my hands. She looks down at the picture and gasps.
Oh my God!
It's a very nice tattoo, I tell her. She hands me back my phone and rolls her eyes, walking again in the direction of the restaurant. She can roll her eyes all she wants. It doesn't change how she reacted to my fingers trailing across the back of her neck. I watch her walk toward the restaurant and realize that I have her figured out already. The more she likes me, the more closed off she becomes. The more sarcasm she inflicts on me. Vulnerability makes her feel weak, so she's pretending to be tougher than she really is. I think the old Silas knew this about her too, which is why he loved her, because apparently he liked the game they played. Apparently I do too, because once again, I'm following her. We walk through the door of the restaurant and Charlie says, "Two people, booth please," before the hostess even has a chance to ask. At least she said please.
"Right this way,"
the woman says. The restaurant is quiet and dark, a stark contrast to the noise and neon lights of Bourbon Street. We both breathe a collective sigh of relief once we're seated. The waitress hands us our menus and takes our drink order. Every now and then, Charlie lifts a hand to the back of her neck as if she can feel the outline of the tattoo.
"What do you think it means?"
she says, still staring at the menu in front of her. I shrug. "I don't know. Maybe you liked forests?" I glance up at her. "These fairy tales you talked about, did they all take place in forests? Maybe the man who needs to break your spell with a kiss is a strapping lumberjack living in the woods." Her eyes meet mine and I can tell my jokes are aggravating her. Or maybe she's aggravated because she thinks I'm funny.
"Stop making fun of me," she says.
"We woke up without our memories at the exact same time, Silas. Nothing is more absurd than that, even fairy tales with lumberjacks."
I smile innocently and look down at my hand. "I have calluses," I tell her, lifting my hand and pointing at the rough skin of my palm. "I could be your lumberjack." She rolls her eyes again, but laughs this time.
"You probably have calluses from jerking off too much."
I hold up my right hand. "But they're on both hands, not just my left."
"Ambidextrous,"
she deadpans. We both grin as our drinks are placed in front of us.
"Ready to order?"
the waitress asks. Charlie quickly scans the menu and says,
"I hate that we can't remember what we like."
She looks up at the waitress. I'll take a grilled cheese, she says. It's safe. Burger and fries, no mayo, I tell her. We hand her back our menus and I refocus on Charlie. You aren't 18 yet. How could you get a tattoo? Bourbon Street doesn't seem to be a stickler for the rules, she says. I probably have a fake ID hidden somewhere. I open the search engine on my phone. I'll try to figure out what it means. I've gotten pretty good at this Google thing. I spend the next few minutes searching every possible meaning of trees and forests and clusters of trees. Just when I think I'm onto something, she pulls my phone away and sets it on the table. Get up, she says, as she stands. We're going to the bathroom. She grabs my hand and pulls me out of the booth. Together? She nods. Yep. I look at the back of her head as she walks away from me, then back at the empty booth. What the? Come on, she says over her shoulder. I follow her to the hallway that leads to the restrooms. She pushes open the women's and peeks inside, then pulls her head out. It's a single stall. It's empty, she says, holding the door open for me. I pause and look at the men's restroom, which looks perfectly fine, so I don't know why she's... Silas! She grabs my arm and pulls me inside the restroom. Once we're inside, I half expect her to wrap her arms around my neck and kiss me, because why else would we be in here together? Take off your shirt. I look down at my shirt. I look back up at her. Are we about to make out? Because I didn't picture it going down like this. She groans and reaches forward, pulling at the hem of my shirt. I help her pull it over my head when she says, I want to see if you have any tattoos, dumbass. I deflate. I feel like an 18-year-old who's just been blueballed. I guess I kind of am. She turns me around, and when I face the mirror, she gasps. Her eyes are fixated on my back. My muscles tense beneath her touch as her fingertips meet my right shoulder blade. She traces a circle, spanning a radius of several inches. I squeeze my eyes shut and try to control my pulse. I suddenly feel drunker than everyone on Bourbon Street combined. I'm gripping the counter in front of me because her fingers, my skin. Jesus, I groan, dropping my head between my shoulders. Focus, Silas. What's wrong? She asks, pausing her inspection of my tattoo. It doesn't hurt, does it? I release a laugh because her hands on me are the opposite of pain. No, Charlie, it doesn't hurt. My eyes meet hers in the mirror, and she stares at me for several seconds. When what she's doing to me finally registers, she glances away and pulls her hand from my back. Her cheeks flush. Put your shirt on and go wait for our food, she demands. I have to pee. I release my grip on the counter and inhale deeply as I pull my shirt back over my head. On my walk back to our table, I realize I never even asked her what the tattoo was. A strand of pearls, she says as she slides into the booth. Black pearls. It's about 6 inches in diameter. Pearls? She nods. Like a... necklace? She nods again and takes a sip of her drink. You have a tattoo of a woman's necklace on your back, Silas. She's smiling now. Very lumberjack-esque. She's enjoying this. Yeah, well, you have trees on your back. Not much to brag about. You'll probably get termites. She laughs out loud, and it makes me laugh, too. She moves the straw around in her drink and looks down at her glass. Knowing me, she pauses. Knowing Charlie... She wouldn't have gotten a tattoo unless it really meant something to her. It had to be something she knew she would never grow tired of, never stop loving. Two familiar words stick out in her sentence. Never, never, I whisper. She looks up at me, recognizing the phrase we repeated to each other in the video. She tilts her head to the side. You think it had something to do with you? With Silas? She shakes her head, silently disagreeing with my suggestion, but I begin scrolling through my phone. Charlie wouldn't be that stupid, she adds. She wouldn't ink something into her skin that was related to a guy. Besides, what would trees have to do with you? I find exactly what I'm looking for, and as much as I'm trying to keep a straight face, I can't stop the smile. I know it's a smug smile, and I probably should not be looking at her like this, but I can't help it. I hand her the phone, and she looks down at the screen and reads out loud. From a Greek name meaning forests or woods, she looks up at me. So, it's the meaning of a name. I nod. Still smug. Scroll up. She scrolls up the screen with a swipe of her finger, and her lips part with a gasp. Derived from the Greek term, Silas. Her mouth clamps shut and her jaw hardens. She hands me back the phone and closes her eyes. Her head moves slowly back and forth. She got a tattoo of the meaning of your name? As expected, she's pretending to be disappointed in herself. As expected, I feel triumphant. You got a tattoo, I tell her, pointing my finger in her direction. It's on you, your skin, my name. I can't stop with the stupid smile plastered across my face. She rolls her eyes again just as our food is laid in front of us. I push mine aside and search the meaning for the name Charlie. I don't pull anything up that could mean pearls. After a few minutes, she finally sighs and says, Try Margaret, my middle name. I search the name Margaret and read the results out loud. Margaret, from the Greek term meaning pearl. I set my phone down. I don't know why it seems like I've just won a bet, but I feel victorious. It's a good thing you're giving me a new name, she says, matter of fact. A new name, my ass. I pull my plate in front of me and pick up a French fry. I point it at her and wink. We're branded, you and me. We are so in love, Charlie. You feeling it yet? Do I make your heart go pitter-patter? These aren't our tattoos, she says. I shake my head. Branded, I repeat. I raise my index finger as if I'm gesturing over her shoulder. Right there. Permanently. Forever. God, she groans. Shut up and eat your damn burger. I eat it. I eat the entire thing with a shit-eating grin. What now? I ask, leaning back in my seat. She's barely touched her food, and I'm pretty sure I just broke a record with how fast I ate mine. She looks up at me, and I can see by the trepidation in her expression that she already knows what she wants to do next. She just doesn't want to bring it up. What is it? Her eyes narrow. I don't want you to make a smart-ass comment in response to what I'm about to suggest. No, Charlie, I say immediately. We aren't eloping tonight. The tattoos are enough commitment for now. She doesn't roll her eyes at my joke this time. She sighs, defeated, and leans back in her seat. I hate her reaction. I like it a whole lot more when she rolls her eyes at me. I reach across the table and cover her hand with mine, rubbing my thumb over hers. I'm sorry, I say. Sarcasm just makes this whole thing feel a little less frightening. I remove my hand from hers. What did you want to say? I'm listening, promise. Lumberjack's honor. She laughs with a small roll of her eyes, and I'm relieved. She glances up at me and shifts in her seat, then begins playing with her straw again. We passed a few tarot shops. I think maybe we should get a reading. I don't even start at her comment. I just nod and pull my wallet out of my pocket. I lay enough money on the table to cover our bill, and then I stand up. I agree, I tell her, reaching out for her hand. I actually don't agree, but I feel bad. These last 2 days have been exhausting, and I know she's tired. The least I can do is make this easier for her, despite knowing this hocus-pocus bullshit isn't going to enlighten us in any way. We pass a few tarot shops during our search, but Charlie shakes her head each time I point one out. I'm not sure what she's looking for, but I actually like walking the streets with her, so I'm not complaining. She's holding my hand, and sometimes I put my arm around her and pull her against me when the paths become too narrow. I don't know if she's noticed, but I've been leading us through a lot of these narrow paths unnecessarily. Anytime I see a big crowd, I aim for it. After all, she's still my backup plan. After about half an hour longer of walking, it looks like we're reaching the end of the French Quarter. The crowds are dwindling, giving me fewer excuses to pull her to me. Some of the shops we're passing have already closed. We make it to St. Philip Street when she pauses in front of an art gallery window. I stand next to her and stare at the displays illuminated inside the building. There are plastic body parts suspended from the ceiling and giant metal sea life clinging to the walls. The main display, which is directly in front of us, just happens to be a small corpse wearing a strand of pearls. She taps her finger against the glass, pointing at the corpse. "Look," she says, "it's me." She laughs and moves her attention to somewhere else inside the store. I'm not looking at the corpse anymore. I'm not looking inside the store anymore. I'm looking at her. The lights from inside the gallery are illuminating her skin, giving her a glow that really does make her look like an angel. I want to run my hand across her back and feel for actual wings. Her eyes move from one object to another as she studies everything beyond the window. She's looking at each piece with bewilderment. I make a mental note to bring her back here when they're actually open. I can't imagine what she'd look like actually being able to touch one of the pieces. She stares into the window a few minutes longer, and I continue to stare at her, only now I've taken two steps, and I'm standing directly behind her. I want to see her tattoo again, now that I know what it means. I wrap my hand around her hair and brush it forward over her shoulder. I half expect her to reach behind her and slap my hand away, but instead, she sucks in a quick rush of air and looks down at her feet. I smile, remembering what it felt like when she ran her fingers over my tattoo. I don't know if I make her feel the same, but she's standing still, allowing my fingers to slip inside the collar of her shirt again. I swallow what feels like three entire heartbeats. I wonder if she's always had this effect on me. I pull her shirt down, revealing her tattoo. A pang shoots through my stomach because I hate that we don't have this memory. I want to remember the discussion we had when we decided to make such a permanent decision. I want to remember who brought the idea up first. I want to remember what she looked like as the needle pierced her skin for the first time. I want to remember how we felt when it was over. I run my thumb over the silhouette of trees while curving the rest of my hand over her shoulder, over skin covered in chills again. She tilts her head to the side and the tiniest of whimpers escapes her throat. I squeeze my eyes shut. "Charlie?" My voice is like sandpaper. I clear my throat to smooth it out. "I changed my mind," I say quietly. "I don't want to give you a new name. I kind of love your old one now." I wait. I wait for her snarky response, for her laughter. I wait for her to push my hand away from the nape of her neck. I get no reaction from her, nothing, which means I get everything. I keep my hand on her back as I slowly step around her. I'm standing between her and the window now, but she keeps her eyes focused on the ground. She doesn't look up at me because I know she doesn't like to feel weak. And right now I'm making her weak. I bring my free hand to her chin and graze my fingers up her jaw, tilting her face to mine. When we lock eyes, I feel like I'm meeting a brand new side of her, a side of her without resolve, a vulnerable side, a side that's allowing herself to feel something. I want to grin and ask her how it feels to be in love, but I know teasing her in this moment would piss her off and she'd walk away, and I can't let that happen, not right now. Not when I finally get to catalog an actual memory with all the numerous fantasies I've had about her mouth. Her tongue slides across her bottom lip, causing jealousy to flutter through me because I really wanted to be the one to do that to her lip. In fact, I think I will. I begin to dip my head just as she presses her hands against my forearms. "Look," she says, pointing at the building next door. The flickering light has stolen her attention, and I want to curse the universe for the simple fact that a light bulb just interfered with what was about to become my absolute favorite of very few memories. I follow her gaze to a sign that doesn't look any different from all of the other tarot signs we've passed. The only thing different about this one is it just completely ruined my moment, and damn it, it was a good moment, a great one. One I know Charlie was also feeling, and I don't know how long it'll take me to get back to that. She's walking in the direction of the shop now. I follow behind her like a lovesick puppy. The building is unmarked, and it makes me wonder what it was about the unreliable asshole lighting that drew her away from my mouth. The only words indicating this is even a store are the no-camera signs plastered on every blackened window. Charlie puts her hands on the door and pushes it open. I follow her inside, and we're soon standing in what looks like the center of a touristy voodoo gift shop. There's a man standing behind a register and a few people browsing the aisles. I try to take everything in as I follow Charlie through the store. She fingers everything, touching the stones, the bones, the jars of miniature voodoo dolls. We silently make our way down each aisle until we reach the back wall. Charlie stops short, grabs my hand, and points at a picture on the wall.
"That gate," she says. "You took a picture of that gate. It's the one hanging on my wall."
"Can I help you?"
We both spin around, and a large, really large man with gauged ears and a lip ring is staring down at us. I kind of want to apologize to him and leave as fast as we can, but Charlie has other plans.
"Do you know what this gate is guarding, the one in the picture?"
Charlie asks him, pointing over her shoulder. The man's eyes lift to the picture frame. He shrugs.
"Must be new," he says. "I've never noticed it before."
He looks at me, arching an eyebrow adorned with multiple piercings, one being a small bone? Is that a bone sticking through his eyebrow?
"You two looking for anything in particular?"
I shake my head and begin to respond, but my words are cut off by someone else's.
"They're here to see me."
A hand reaches through a beaded curtain to our right. A woman steps out, and Charlie immediately sidles against me. I wrap my arm around her. I don't know why she's allowing this place to freak her out. She doesn't seem like the type to believe in this sort of thing, but I'm not complaining. A frightened Charlie means a very lucky Silas.
"This way,"
the woman says, motioning for us to follow her. I start to object, but then remind myself that places like this, they're all about theatrics. It's Halloween 365 days a year. She's just playing a part. She's no different than Charlie and me, pretending to be two people we aren't. Charlie glances up at me, silently asking for permission to follow her. I nod, and we follow the woman through the curtain of... I touch one of the beads and take a closer look. Plastic skulls. Nice touch. The room is small, and every wall is covered with thick, velvet black curtains. There are candles lit around the room, flickers of light licking the walls, the floor, us. The woman takes a seat at a small table in the center of the room for us to sit in the two chairs across from her. I keep Charlie's hand wrapped tightly in mine as we both sit. The woman begins to slowly shuffle a deck of tarot cards.
"A joint reading, I assume," she asks.
We both nod. She hands Charlie the deck and asks her to hold them. Charlie takes them from her and clasps her hands around them. The woman nudges her head toward me.
"Both of you, hold them."
I want to roll my eyes, but instead I reach my hand across Charlie and place it on the deck with her.
"You need to want the same thing out of this reading. Multiple readings can sometimes overlap when there isn't cohesiveness. It's important your goal is the same."
Charlie nods. "They are. It is." I hate the desperation in her voice, like we're actually going to get an answer. Surely she doesn't believe this. The woman reaches across to take the cards from our hands. Her fingers brush mine and they're ice cold. I pull my hand back and grab Charlie's, moving it onto my lap. She begins laying cards out on the table, one by one. They're all face down. When she's finished, she asks me to pull a card from the deck. When I hand her the card, she sets it apart from the others. She points at it.
"This card will give you your answer, but the other cards explain the path to your question."
She puts her fingers on the card in the middle.
"This position represents your current situation."
She flips it over. "Death?" Charlie whispers. Her hand tightens around mine. The woman looks at Charlie and tilts her head.
It isn't necessarily a bad thing,
she says.
The death card represents a major change, a reformation. The two of you have experienced a loss of sorts.
She touches another card.
This position represents the immediate past.
She flips it over, and before I look down at the card, I can see the woman's eyes narrow. My eyes fall to the card. The devil.
This indicates something or someone was enslaving you in the past. It could represent a number of things close to you. Parental influence. An unhealthy relationship.
Her eyes meet mine.
Inverted cards reflect a negative influence. And although it represents the past, it can also signify something you're currently transitioning through.
Her fingers fall to another card.
This card represents your immediate future.
She slides the card toward her and flips it over. A quiet gasp falls from her mouth, and I feel Charlie flinch. I glance down at her, and she's staring intently at the woman, waiting for an explanation. She looks terrified. I don't know what kind of game this woman is playing, but it's beginning to piss me off.
The tower card? Charlie says. What does it mean?
The woman flips the card back over as if it's the worst card in the deck. She closes her eyes and blows out a long breath. Her eyes pop open again, and she's staring right at Charlie.
It means destruction.
I roll my eyes and push back from the table. Charlie, let's get out of here. Charlie looks at me pleadingly.
We're almost finished, she says.
I relent and scoot back toward the table. The woman flips over two more cards, explaining them to Charlie, but I don't hear a single word she says. My eyes wander around the room as I try to remain patient and let her finish, but I feel like we're wasting time. Charlie's hand begins squeezing the life out of mine, so I return my attention to the reading. The woman's eyes are closed tight, and her lips are moving. She's mumbling words I can't decipher. Charlie scoots closer to me, and I instinctively wrap my arm around her. Charlie, I whisper, making her look up at me. It's theatrics. She gets paid to do this. Don't be scared. My voice must have broken the woman out of her conveniently timed trance. She's tapping the table, trying to get our attention as if she wasn't off in La La Land for the last minute and a half. Her fingers fall to the card I pulled out of the deck. Her eyes meet mine, and then they move to Charlie's.
This card,
she says slowly,
is your outcome card. Combined with the other cards in the reading, this gives you the answer to why you are here.
She flips the card over. The woman doesn't move. Her eyes are locked on the card beneath her fingertips. The room grows eerily quiet, and as if on cue, one of the candles loses its flame. Another nice touch, I think. I look down at the outcome card. There aren't any words on it. No title, no picture. The card is blank. I can feel Charlie stiffen in my arms as she stares at the blank card on the table. I shove back from the table and pull Charlie up. This is ridiculous, I say loudly, accidentally knocking my chair over. I'm not pissed that the woman is trying to scare us. It's her job. I'm pissed because she's actually scaring Charlie, yet she's keeping up this ridiculous facade. I take Charlie's face in my hands and look her in the eyes. She planted that card to scare you, Charlie. This is all bullshit. I take both her hands and begin to turn her toward the exit.
There are no blank cards in my tarot deck, the woman says.
I pause in my tracks and turn around to face her. Not because of what she said, but because of the way she said it. She sounded scared. Scared for us? I close my eyes and exhale. She's an actress, Silas. Calm your shit. I push open the door and pull Charlie outside. I don't stop walking until we're around the building and on another street. When we're away from the store and away from the damn flickering of the sign, I stop walking and pull her against me. She wraps her arms around my waist and buries her head against my chest. "Forget all of that," I say, rubbing my hand in reassuring circles over her back. "Fortune-telling, tarot readings, it's ridiculous, Charlie." She pulls her face from my shirt and looks up at me. "Yeah. Ridiculous like the both of us waking up at school with no memory of who we are." I close my eyes and pull away from her. I run my hands through her hair, the frustration from the day catching up to me. I can make light of it all with my jokes. I can dismiss her theories, from tarot readings to fairy tales, simply because it doesn't make sense to me, but she's right. None of this makes sense, and the more we try to uncover the mystery, the more I feel like we're wasting our damn time.
Chapter 13. Charlie. His lips fold in, and he shakes his head. He wants out of here. I can feel his edginess. "Maybe we should go back and ask her more detailed questions," I suggest.
"No way," he says. "I'm not entertaining that again."
He starts to walk away, and I consider going back in there myself. I'm just about to take my first step toward the shop when the open sign in the window turns off. The shop is in sudden darkness. I chew on the inside of my cheek. I could come back when Silas isn't around. Maybe she'd talk to me more.
"Charlie!" he calls.
I run after him until we're walking side by side again. We can see our breath as we walk. When did it get this cold? I rub my hands together. "I'm hungry," I say.
"You're always hungry. I've never seen someone so small eat so much."
He doesn't offer to feed me this time, so I continue to walk beside him. "What just happened back there?" I ask. I'm trying to make a joke of it, but my stomach feels funny.
"Someone tried to scare us. That's it."
I look up at Silas. Mostly everything together except those shoulders, which are tense. But what if she's right? What if there weren't any blank cards in her tarot deck?
"No,"
he says.
"Just no."
I bite my lip and sidestep a man dancing backward down the sidewalk. I don't understand how you can dismiss something so easily, considering our circumstances, I say from between my teeth. "Don't you think..."
"Why don't we talk about something else?"
Silas says.
"Right, like what we're going to do next weekend?
Or how about we talk about what we did last weekend? Or maybe we talk about..." I smack my hand against my forehead. "The Electric Crush Diner. How could I forget about that?"
"What?"
Silas asks.
"What's that?"
"We were there. You and me, last weekend. I found a receipt in my jeans pocket." Silas is watching me recount all of this with a look of mild annoyance on his face. "I took Jeanette there for dinner last night. A server recognized me."
"Hey!"
he yells over my shoulder.
"If you touch her with that, I'll break you in half."
I glance behind me and see a man pointing a foam finger at my butt. He backs off when he sees the look on Silas's face.
"Why didn't you tell me that?"
Silas says under his breath, directing his attention back to me.
"That's not like tarot readers. That's something important."
"I really don't know. I meant to..." He grabs my hand, but this time it's not for the pleasure of our palms pressing together. He drags me down the street with one hand while typing something into his phone with the other. I'm both impressed and mildly annoyed at being spoken to like that. We may have been something in our other life, but in this life, I don't even know his middle name. "It's on North Rampart Street," I say helpfully.
"Yeah."
He's pissed. I kind of like the emo-ness of it. We pass through a park with a fountain. Street vendors have set up their artwork along the fence. They stare at us as we pass by. Silas is taking one step to my three. I trot to keep up. We walk so far until my feet hurt, and finally I yank my hand free of his. He stops and turns around. I don't know what to say or what I'm mad at, so I place my hands on my hips and glare at him.
"What's wrong with you?"
he says. "I don't know," I shout, "but you can't just drag me around the city. I can't walk as fast as you, and my feet hurt." This feels familiar. Why does this feel familiar? He looks away, and I can see the muscles working in his jaw. He turns back to me and everything happens quickly. He takes two steps and scoops me off my feet. Then he resumes his pace with my bouncing ever so slightly in his arms. After my initial squeal, I settle down and clasp my arms around his neck. I like it up here where I can smell his cologne and touch his skin. I don't recall seeing perfume among Charlie's things, and I doubt I would have thought to put any on. What does that say about Silas? That in the midst of all of this, he thought to pick up a bottle and spray cologne on his neck before he left the house this morning. Was he always the type of person who cared about the little things, like smelling good? As I think these thoughts, Silas stops to ask a woman who has fallen in the street if she's all right. She's drunk and sloppy. When she tries to stand up, she steps on the hem of her dress and falls back down. Silas sets me down on the sidewalk and goes to help her.
Are you bleeding? Did you hurt yourself?
He asks. He helps her stand, leads her back to where I'm waiting. She slurs her words and pats him on the cheek. And I wonder if he knew when he went to help her that she was homeless. I wouldn't touch her. She smells. I step away from both of them and watch him watch her. He's concerned. He keeps his eyes on her until she's stumbled off down the next street, and then he swings his head around to find me. In this moment, right now, it's so clear to me who Charlie is. She's not as good as Silas. She loves him because he's so different from her. Maybe that's why she went to Brian, because she couldn't live up to Silas. Like I can't. He half smiles at me, and I think he's embarrassed to be caught caring.
Ready?
I want to tell him that what he did was nice, but nice is such a silly word for kindness. Anyone could pretend to be nice. What Silas did was innate, bold-faced kindness. I haven't had any thoughts like that. I think about the girl in class the first morning who dropped her books at my feet. She looked at me with fear. She expected me not to help. And more. What else? Silas and I walk in silence. He checks his phone every few minutes to make sure we're headed in the right direction. And I check his face. I wonder if this is what a crush feels like. If watching a man help a woman is supposed to elicit these types of feelings. And then we're here. He points across the street, and I nod. Yeah, that's it. But it's almost not. The diner has transformed since I was here with Jeanette. It's loud and pumping. There are men lined up on the sidewalk smoking. They part for us as we walk by. I can feel the bass in my ankles as we stand outside the doors. They open for us as a group leaves. A girl walks past me laughing, her pink fur jacket brushing against my face. Inside, people are defending their space with widened elbows and jutted hips. People glare at us as we walk by. This is my space. Back off. I'm waiting for the rest of my group. Keep moving. We bypass the few empty seats in favor of walking deeper into the building. We press through the crowd, walking sideways, and flinching when raucous laughter erupts next to us. A drink spills on my shoes. Someone says sorry. I don't even know who because it's so dark. And then someone calls our names. Silas! Charlie! Over here! A boy and... Who was that girl who picked me up this morning? Annie? Amy? Hey! She says as we draw close. I can't believe you actually came back here after last weekend.
Why wouldn't we?
Silas asks. I take the seat I am offered and stare up at the three of them.
You punch a guy, throw over a couple of tables, and wonder why you shouldn't come back,
the boy says, along with a laugh. I think he's Annie/Amy's boyfriend, by the way he looks at her. Like they're in on something together. Life, maybe. It's how Silas and I look at each other. Except we really are in on something together. You acted like an ass, she says.
Amy,
the spare boy says.
Don't.
Amy. I want to know more about this person Silas punched. He deserved it, I say. Amy raises her eyebrows and shakes her head. Whatever she's thinking, she's too afraid to say it, because she turns away.
I try her boyfriend next. Don't you think so? I ask innocent-like. He shrugs, goes to sit next to Amy. They're all scared of me, I think. But why? I order a Coke. Amy's head snaps around to look at me when she hears. Regular Coke, not diet? Do I look like I need to drink diet? I snap. She shrinks back. I don't know where that came from. Honest to God. I don't even know how much I weigh. I decide to shut up and let Silas do the detective work before I offend someone again. He drops down next to Amy's boyfriend, and they begin to talk. The music makes it impossible to eavesdrop, and Amy is doing her best not to look at me. So I people watch. People. They all have memories. Know who they are. I'm jealous.
Let's go, Charlie.
Silas is standing above me, waiting. Amy and her boyfriend are watching us from across the table. It's a big table. I wonder who else is coming to join them, and how many of those people hate me. Out of the restaurant and back onto the street. Silas clears his throat.
I got into a fight.
I heard, I say. Did they tell you who it was?
Yeah.
I wait, and when he doesn't offer the information, I say, well?
I punched the owner in the face. Brian's father.
My head snaps around. What the hell?
Yeah,
he says. He rubs the scruff on his chin thoughtfully.
Because he said something about you.
Me? I get a sick feeling in my stomach. I know what's coming, but I don't know what's coming.
He told me he was giving you a job as a waitress.
Okay, it's not so bad. We need the money.
Because you were Brian's girl. So I punched him, I guess.
Damn.
Yeah. That kid Eller told me we needed to leave before Brian's dad called the cops.
The cops? I echo.
I guess Brian's dad and my dad have worked together on some stuff. He agreed not to press charges last week because of it, but I'm not supposed to go back there. Also, Landon has been calling around looking for me. Apparently my dad is wondering why I left practice. Everyone's pretty pissed about that.
Oops, I say.
Yeah, oops.
He says it like he doesn't care. We go back the way we came, both of us quiet. We pass a few street artists I didn't notice before. Two of them look like a couple. The man is playing the bagpipes while the woman draws pictures in colored chalk on the sidewalk. We step over the drawings, both of our heads down, examining. Silas takes out his camera and snaps a few pictures, while I watch her turn a few lines into a couple kissing. A couple kissing. That reminds me. We need to kiss, I say to him. He almost drops his phone. His eyes are big when he looks at me. To see if something happens, like in the fairy tales we talked about.
Oh,
he says.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Where, now?
I roll my eyes and walk away from him, toward a fountain near a church. Silas follows behind. I want to see his face, but I don't look. This is all business. I can't make it into something else. It's an experiment. That's it. When we reach the fountain, we both sit down on the rim of it. I don't want to do it this way, so I stand up and face him. Okay, I say, coming to stand in front of him. Close your eyes. He does, but there's a grin on his face. Keep them closed, I instruct. I don't want him to see me. I barely know what I look like. I don't know if my face contorts under pressure. His head is tilted up, and mine is tilted down. I put my hands on his shoulders and feel his hands lift to my waist as he pulls me closer, between his knees. His hands slide up without warning, his thumbs grazing my stomach, and then making a quick swipe along the underside of my bra. My stomach clenches.
Sorry, he says. I can't see what I'm doing.
I smirk this time, and I'm glad he can't see my reaction right now. Put your hands back on my waist, I command. He puts them too low, and now his palms are on my ass. He squeezes a little, and I smack his arm.
What? He laughs. I can't see.
Up, I say. He slides them a little higher, but slowly. I tingle down to my toes. Higher, I say again. He takes them up a quarter of an inch.
Is this?
Before he can finish his sentence, I lean my face down and kiss him. He's smiling at first, still in the middle of his little game. But when he feels my lips, his smile dissolves. His mouth is soft. I lift my hands to his face and cup it as he pulls me tighter, wrapping his arms around my backside. I'm kissing down and he's kissing up. At first, I expect to just give him a peck. That's all they ever show in the fairy tales. A quick peck and the curse is broken. We'd have gotten our memories back by now if this were going to work. The experiment should be over. But neither of us stops. He kisses with soft lips and a firm tongue. It's not sloppy or wet. It moves in and out of my mouth sensually as his lips suck softly on mine. I run my fingers up the back of his neck and into his hair. And that's when he stands, forcing me to take a step back and change position. I do a good job of hiding my gasp. Now I'm kissing up, and he's kissing down. Except he's holding me to him, his arm wrapped around my waist, his free hand curled around the back of my neck. I cling to his shirt, dizzy. Soft lips, dragging, tongue between my lips, pressure on my back. Something pressing between us that makes me feel a riot of heat. I push away, gasping. I stand there looking at him, and he looking at me. Something has happened. It's not our memories that have awoken, but something else that makes us feel drunk. And it occurs to me as I stand here, wanting him to kiss me again, that this is exactly what doesn't need to happen. We're going to want more of the new us, and we'll lose focus. He slides a hand down his face, as if to sober himself up. He smiles.
I don't care what our real first kiss was,
he says.
That's the one I want to remember.
I stare at his smile long enough to remember it. And then I turn and walk away.
Charlie!
He yells. I ignore him and keep walking. That was stupid. What was I thinking? A kiss isn't going to bring our memories back. This isn't a fairy tale. He grabs my arm.
Hey, slow down.
And then, what are you thinking? I keep walking in the direction I'm certain we came from. I'm thinking I need to get home. I have to make sure Jeanette has eaten dinner and...
About us, Charlie.
I can feel him staring at me. There is no us, I say. I bring my eyes back to his. Haven't you heard? We were obviously broken up and I was dating Brian. His dad was giving me a job.
We were an us, Charlie. And holy shit, I can see why.
I shake my head. We can't lose focus. That was your first kiss, I say. It could feel like that with anyone.
So it felt that way for you too?
He asks, running around to stand in front of me. I consider telling him the truth. That if I were dead like Snow White and he kissed me like that, surely my heart would kick back to life. That I'd be the one to slay dragons for that kiss. But we don't have time to kiss like that. We need to find out what's happened and how to reverse it. I didn't feel anything, I say. It was just a kiss, and it didn't work. A lie that burns my insides, it's so foul. I have to go.
Charlie,
I'll see you tomorrow. I lift a hand over my head and wave, because I don't want to turn around and look at him. I'm afraid. I want to be with him, but it's not a good idea. Not until we figure more of this out. I think he's going to follow me, so I wave over a cab. I open the door and look back at Silas to show him that I'm fine. He nods, and then lifts his phone to snap a picture of me. The first time she left me, he's probably thinking. He then buries his hands in his pockets and turns in the direction of his car. I wait until he's past the fountain before I lean down to speak to the driver. Sorry, I changed my mind. I slam the door and step back to the curb. I don't have money for a cab anyway. I'll go back to the diner and ask Amy for a ride. The cabbie peels off, and I duck down a different street so Silas won't see me. I need to be alone. I need to think.
Chapter 14. Silas. Another night of shitty sleep. Only this time my lack of sleep wasn't because I